Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on War is a Racket, right after this. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small." But he said, "You shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They tell us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Then in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away. And then in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced into our current practice the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills. And they've given us clad coinage in place of silver coins. So in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have now gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school twice a year here at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and then it's an educational, informative, and entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. A fellow by the name of Smedley Butler. You ever heard that name, Smedley, before? Sounds like something that came out of a Walt Disney movie. But Smedley Butler was a three-star Marine general, and he wrote a little book. It's called War is a Racket. I couldn't think of a better guy to spill the beans on the war racket than a three-star Marine general. Somebody who'd actually been there on the front and saw firsthand what the issue was all about, and then came back and gave us a report. Many times I've said, the only time that we really get a look-see into the inner workings of government or crime or racketeering is when somebody who's on the inside blows the whistle. You've got to have a whistleblower, somebody who's actually there participating in these nefarious activities. And then who can come back and say, you know, I've had a change of heart, and I want to report what it is that's going on over here to you so that you hopefully can take some kind of action to stop it, because it's wrong. Something isn't right here. Now, when you ask the average guy what he thinks of war, he says, oh, war is terrible and it's bad, wicked, and it's just something we want to avoid at all costs. But We Americans spend nearly, not quite, but nearly a half a trillion dollars a year on war and war preparation. Right now we're engaged in two wars in two countries, and we're planning for a couple of more wars, one in Iran and one in North Korea. Well, I say we're planning. You can rest assured that the military planners in the Pentagon are looking at North Korea. Somebody is. I mean, there's a little group of generals someplace, and their job is to look at North Korea and what do we need to do to attack and defeat them. And then there's another group over in another part of the Pentagon, and they're looking at Iran. What do we have to do to attack and defeat them? Now, whether it comes to fruition or not, it's another story, but there's planning going on. There always has been. The war in Iraq wasn't just done in a vacuum. You know, overnight somebody said, oh, let's go to war. That was well thought out and well planned, well executed, too. You know, you can say what you want about Donald Rumsfeld, but you got to admit that the fourth largest army in the world was defeated in just a matter of days, about 3 weeks. That's pretty sizable. And now we're engaged in this war. It's been going on now for about 3 years. And why? You know, if you can defeat your enemy in 21 days, why do you stay there for another 3 years and keep fighting with these people? Is there a reason for that? Is there some hidden agenda maybe that we haven't seen? Now, Americans are getting tired of the war in Iraq, as evidenced by the election, but why does it take 3 years of war over there? What was the purpose behind that? It's not done in a vacuum. It's not something that's an accident. There are planners. There are people behind the scenes. There are people that make money off of these wars, you know. And that's why this Marine general, in his little book, he said, this war is a racket. Now, Al Capone was in the racket. So racket is an illegal enterprise. Just look it up in the dictionary. A racket is an illegal enterprise that is loathed and looked down upon. It's the racketeering that goes on in the mafia, where they have loan sharking, or they have prostitution, or maybe they have murder incorporated, you know, and they do this for money. They murder people for money. They operate brothels for money. They operate loan sharking for money. And then there's this war thing. Now, what's illegal about war? You know, I guess the first place to start is, well, isn't war legal? Well, in the Bible, there's a whole series of statutes that deal with war. Just like there's a whole series of statutes that deal with theft and murder and adultery and Sabbaths and things like that. There's a whole series of statutes that deal with war. And so we humans down here, we don't follow the scripture very well. I mean, we don't follow the scriptural principles concerning the economics, for instance. You know, we use paper money and Federal Reserve banks, and we use insurance. These are activities that are looked upon by the scripture, looked upon by God as being rackets or criminal activities. They're a violation of a set standard that he has set down. And so we elect legislatures and congresses and parliaments and so on. And these people decide that they're going to go to war. And so, you know, the German parliament decides they're going to go to war against Poland in 1939, and so they issue a piece of paper and says, you know, we're dissatisfied with what's going on the other side of the border, so we're going to go straighten that out. And so they go to war. And then, of course, the British are allied with the Poles, and so this brings the British and the French in on the Polish side against the Germans, who are in turn allied with, let's say, Austria and Czechoslovakia and maybe a couple others, and Japan, and, you know. And so then they go to war, and then pretty soon the Americans get into it, and you've got this thing called World War II. Smedley Butler says that's part of a racket. It's a criminal enterprise. It's a criminal enterprise that benefits some people at the expense of a large number of others. Now, Butler wasn't personally involved in World War II. He was personally involved in World War I, in some incursions in South and Latin America, and Nicaragua and Panama and places like that. And he was in the military for 32 years. He was a three-star general. He had a pretty good opportunity to make some observations. And he said that he was a gangster, a mobster, operating under the guise of the United States of America, which is a multinational corporation, along with Germany and France and England and Japan, a lot of other multinational corporations, in an operation to expand trade, commerce, business, and industry from the United States to Nicaragua and Panama and around the world, and that he was working primarily for Harriman and Brown Brothers and Citicorp and J.P. Morgan and other international businessmen to promote their agenda and to promote their businesses by using the United States military. Now, you know, the mob does that. They have some enforcers. They have some people with guns under their armpits, and they go out and they break bones and they shoot people, and they do this in order to advance their economic agenda. Has it ever occurred to anybody that outside of New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles that maybe there's another mob that's at work, and that they have an international agenda, that they're trying to enforce their brand of capitalism, their brand of monetary economics upon other nations in the world? Has that ever occurred to anybody? Well, that's the thrust of the little book, War is a Racket. And Butler says war is a racket, and it always has been. It's possibly the oldest, easily and most profitable, and surely the most vicious. It's the only one international in scope, and it's the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. Well, take a look at the war over in Iraq. There's some multinational corporations like Halliburton who has contracts that they don't even have to bid on. See, it used to be, you know, when I was a kid, it used to be that if you wanted one of these lucrative war contracts, you had to bid on it. You had to be the low bidder. Well, Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root and Bechtel Corporation, these big multinational corporations, are over in Iraq operating, taking in billions of dollars in profits. Well, billions of dollars in revenues. And we presume that they're making a couple of pennies in the process. At the same time that Americans are dying out there on the battlefield. And so for those 3,000 Americans who are dying out there on the battlefield, which I would concede that it's a small price to pay for all of the billions of dollars that we are reaping in the way of benefits, that we're reaping in the way of economics that benefit America. But for the 3,000 guys that died and the 3,000 families that, you know, have lost a son or a daughter, and then there are the tens of thousands that are injured over there, you know, the guys that lose their legs and lose their arms or their eyes and so on, they come back home and their bodies are broken for life, and they're doing that for a reason. And these young soldiers and Marines and so on, they have in their minds their nation that they're going off to war to protect, to go off and fight for. They're fighting for something. They're patriotic young people. And then on the other side, you know, the other side, you gotta give them a little credit too, you know. They've got a few thousand guys over there. They call them, freedom fighters. And they're over there. They're called an insurgency. And that's the beauty of war. See, both sides are righteous. Both sides, from their point of view, see that they are fighting this righteous war for a righteous end, and they're doing it for their righteous God. In the case of the Muslims, they're fighting for Allah, and in the case of the Americans, they're fighting for Jesus. And you got Jesus and Allah over here who are at loggerheads over some political issue that we're not quite sure what this political issue is, whether it's weapons of mass destruction or regime change or whether, you know, there's something else going on, maybe oil or something else going on over here that you and I behind the scenes don't see. Well, Butler said that he could see that, having been in the service for 30 years, fighting for the corporations. He says, a racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to be by the majority of people. Only a small inside group knows what it's all about. And it's conducted for the benefit of the very few, at the expense of the very many. And out of war, a few people make huge fortunes. Well, now take a look now at the huge fortunes being made. The war in Iraq is costing about $2 billion a week. Well, now, $2 billion a week, you know, adds up to about $100 billion a year. Now, I've heard some numbers bandied about that the total cost of this Iraq-Afghani war over here is going to cost us somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 trillion to $2 trillion. They're not quite sure. But you see, all these people that are fighting in the war over here, and they get injured, they have to be taken care of for the rest of their lives at taxpayer expense. And then this money that we're using today to fight this war isn't money that we've got saved up in a savings account someplace. This is money that we're borrowing and paying interest on, and will be for the next 30 or 40 years. And then there's the direct cost that comes right out of taxes. Congress appropriates $60 billion or $80 billion a year, and then we just take that right out of taxes. And then we issue bonds and pay interest on those. And then we're borrowing a lot of money, and then we've got all of these accrued expenses that will come due as time progresses along over the next 30 or 40 years. And when you add all that up, they're telling us that it's going to be more like $1 trillion. Now, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. So for 4 years, we've been spending $100 billion a year. Now, they said that this thing was going to cost us about $50 billion total and that we would take it out of the Iraqis. We would make them pay for it with their oil. That was what they told us when they started this war back in 2003. Now, as it turns out, the Iraqis over there are queued up in lines because they don't have enough oil. They're not producing enough oil over there for their own domestic supply. And then on top of that, they got to import oil from Kuwait and Saudi Arabia to run their own country. Now, here's a country that has 25% of the world's oil reserves, and they're importing oil. So it doesn't sound like that was a very profitable venture. Just from the economics of it going in, that didn't sound very logical economically. Now, we're spending $100 billion for 4 years. That's $400 billion. I suppose we're going to be there for another year or two. So that's a half a trillion dollars in direct war costs. And then you've got all of these veterans that come back, and they're all beat up. Cost $2 or $3 million, you know, for each one of these guys for rehabilitation, refitting with artificial limbs and things like that. And then there's the interest on the debt, you know, and then there's all of this reconstruction that has to go on. I mean, after you blew it up, you know, and destroyed it, then you got to come back and rebuild it. And this is what war economies are all about. You go in there and you blow it up, and then you come in here and you rebuild it. And then you go blow it up, and then you come in and rebuild it. It's kind of like kids playing in sandbox, you know. You're out here, you're working hard. You ever watch little kids? They work real hard, and they're building this thingy, whatever it is that they're building here and there. In their sandbox, and then pretty soon they bring their pretend airplanes over and they just blow it all to pieces, see, and they destroy it all. And then when they get through destroying it, they turn around, they get real diligent again, they rebuild it all again. That's why I guess they say that the only difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. So here we are over in Iraq, and we're busily destroying everything. And then while we're in the process of destroying it, we're trying to rebuild it at the same time. I guess that's why Bechtel is there. They're rebuilding things. And so the Iraqis have come to the conclusion that with 6 hours of electricity per day in Baghdad, they were better off with Saddam Hussein. He could deliver more electricity and deliver more benefits to them and give them more security than they can get today, and they're working hard to establish democracy. And I guess they're starting to figure out that if this is the cost of democracy, maybe it ain't worth near as much as we're paying. At least that's from their perspective. Now, in the World War, speaking of World War I, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in World War I in the United States alone during the Great War. That many admitted their huge blood gains in their income tax returns. How many other war millionaires falsified their income tax returns? No one knows. So it's 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires that came out of World War I. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle? How many of them dug a trench? How many of them knew what it meant to go hungry in a rat-infested dugout? How many of these millionaires from World War I spent sleepless, frightened nights ducking shells and shrapnel and machine gun bullets? How many of them parried the bayonet thrust of an enemy? How many of them were wounded or killed in battle? Well, I'd ask the same question today. How many of the politicians in Washington, I think there's as of this moment in time, in the Congress, 535 members of Congress, not a single one of them has a son or a daughter in the conflict in Iraq. Not a one. There was one guy running for office. Actually, that's a woman down in Texas. She was running for office. She lost. She was running as a Democrat. She has two children in Iraq. If she was elected, if she had been elected, she would be the only member of Congress who would have had a son or a daughter in the war in Iraq. I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. So here we are again in Butler, who is talking about World War I. If we just applied the same standards to the war in Iraq, how many of the people in Congress have sons and daughters in Iraq? And the answer is zero. Now, how many of the people that are operating Halliburton or Kellogg Brown and Root or Bechtel and are making millions of dollars and maybe billions of dollars of profits, how many of those people are suffering or are fighting or are using or suffering any privation from the war? Not any that I know of. So he's made another good point. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle? None. Now, out of war nations acquire additional territory. And if they're victorious, that is, they acquire territory, they just take it. And this newly acquired territory promptly is exploited by the few. The self-same few who wrung dollars out of blood in the war, the general public shoulders the bill, but none of the profits. And what is this bill? Well, the bill renders a horrific accounting. Newly placed gravestones, mangled bodies, shattered minds, broken hearts and homes, economic instability, depression, and all of its attendant miseries. Back-breaking taxation for generations and generations to come. And that's what Joe Sixpack gets out of the war. For a great many years as a soldier, I had a suspicion that war was a racket. But it wasn't until I retired and entered civilian life did I fully realize it. Now that I see the international war clouds again gathering as they are today, I must face it and then speak out. Let me pause right here and point out that when he wrote this book, it's 1935. Adolf Hitler and Mussolini and Tojo are rattling sabers. And he's looking around. He's retired now from the army. He went in after the Spanish-American War. He's a Marine, not an Army man, but as a Marine, spent 32 years in here. He's a civilian. It's 1935. He takes a look around him, and he says, my God, what's coming down here in 1935 is the same thing that was coming down in 1912, 13, and 14. And I lived through that. Maybe I ought to speak up and say something. Again, they're choosing sides. France and Russia met and agreed to stand side by side. Italy and Austria hurried to make a similar agreement. Poland and Germany cast sheep's eyes at each other, forgetting for the moment their dispute over the Polish corridor. The assassination of King Alexander of Yugoslavia complicated matters. So Yugoslavia and Hungary, long bitter enemies, were almost at each other's throats. Italy was ready to jump in, but France was waiting, and so was Czechoslovakia. All of them are looking ahead to war. Not the people, though. Not those who actually fight and pay and die. Only those who foment wars and remain safely at home to profit. Those are the people who are rattling the sabers. Now, there are 40 million men under arms in the world today. And our statesmen and diplomats have the temerity to say that war is not in the making. Okay, well now let's stop and pause here for a moment. This is 1935. in 1935, around the world, 40 million men are under arms. And here's a Marine general, and he says, there are 40 million men under arms in the world today, and our statesmen and diplomats have the temerity to say that war is not in the making. Isn't that what we hear today? There's an old adage in the Bible that says, peace, peace, when there is no peace. It's reported twice by Jeremiah. And he made this observation. This is God speaking now through Jeremiah. And he says, you know, you hear these politicians, you hear these people, and they're constantly talking about peace. Peace in Palestine, and peace in Iraq, and peace in Iran, and peace on the Korean Peninsula. Isn't that what we're hearing all the time? Peace, peace, when there is no peace. There hasn't been any peace in the whole 20th century. Not on planet Earth. There isn't any peace in the 21st century. At least not yet. They keep talking about it, though. Well, hell's bells, are these 40 million men being trained as ballet dancers? Did you hear that? Smedley Butler. He says, now I'm a Marine general, and there's 40 million men under arms. The politicians say that there's no war in the making, and he says, well, what the hell do you think these 40 million men are doing over here, training for ballet? Boys and girls, soldiers train for war. They're training for killing people. Not in Italy, to be sure. Premier Mussolini knows that they're being trained for. He, at least, is frank enough to speak out. And only the other day, El Deus in International Conciliation, the publication of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, had this to say. This is Mussolini now. He said, quote, and above all fascism, and more, the more it considers and observes the future and the development of humanity, quite apart from political considerations of the moment, believes neither in the possibility for the utility of perpetual peace. War alone brings up to its highest tension all human energy and puts the stamp of nobility upon the peoples who have the courage to meet it. Here's a direct quote, you know, from Mussolini. And he says, hell, the war is the greatest thing that we can be involved in. This is in 1935 now. Now, undoubtedly, Mussolini means exactly what he says. His well-trained army, his great fleet of planes, and even his navy are ready for war. In fact, they're anxious for war. Apparently, his recent stand at the side of Hungary in the latter's dispute with Yugoslavia showed that. And the hurried mobilization of his troops on the Austrian border after the assassination of Dollfuss showed it also. There are others in Europe, too, whose saber-rattling presages war, sooner or later. It's coming. Herr Hitler, with his rearming of Germany and his constant demands for more and more arms, as an equal, if not a greater menace to peace. France only recently increased the term of military service for its youth from 1 year to 18 months. Yes, all over, nations are camping on their arms. The mad dogs of Europe are on the loose once again. And out in the Orient, the maneuvering is more adroit. Back in 1904, when Russia and Japan fought the Russo-Japanese War, we kicked our old friends, the Russians, and then backed Japan. Then, our very generous international bankers were financing Japan. Now the trend is to poison us against the Japanese. What does this open-door policy in China mean to us? Our trade with China is about $90 million a year. Or the Philippine Islands. We've spent about $600 million in the Philippines since we took that possession away from the Spanish 35 years ago. And we and our bankers and industrialists and speculators have private investments there of less than $200 million. Let me pause here for a moment. Let me point this out. We Americans went to war in 1898 against Spain. Up until 1898, America didn't own any possessions outside of the United States. And so, we went to war against Spain, and we won a war, and we won some territory. The Philippines was part of that territory. In 35 years, from 1900 to 1935, we American taxpayers spent $600 million on that piece of real estate. And our businesses invested about $200 million, or about one-third of that amount of money, in the Philippines. Let me ask you a question here. Let's suppose that I gave you a house. And I said, I'm going to sell you this house for $600,000. $600,000 house. A little over $500,000. And 35 years after you've taken this house, you sell it for $200 million. You've lost $400 million. Would you call that a good deal? Or wouldn't you have said, you know, it would have been better for me over this 35-year period if I would have never bought that house and never gotten involved in that real estate transaction at all? Now, here's a 3-star Marine general. He comes up and he says, you know, we invested $600 million in a $200 million project. Lost $400 million in the transaction. What in the hell is worth fighting over? Now, let's suppose you've got this house, and I come along and say, I'm going to take this thing away from you. I don't know how much we spent on World War II in regaining the Philippines, but it was a bunch. It was more than the $600 million that we spent. It was billions and billions and billions of dollars. That was from 1941 to 45. Then in 1946, we gave the Filipinos their independence. I mean, think about this from an economic point of view. You start off, and you take this piece of real estate away from the Spanish. You spend $600 million on it. You got $200 million worth of investments there. You've lost $400 million. The Japanese come along and say, we're going to take this away from you. You would have thought that we would have said, thank you, thank you, thank you, Mr. Japanese. You take the loss. But no, we said, we're not going to sit here and let you take this loss away from us. And so we fought and spent billions and billions and billions of additional dollars. And then we turned around and gave the prize away to a third group of people called the Filipinos. Now, what kind of economics do you call that? So when Butler says that war is a racket, I'm sure that there were people that made money off of it. But, you know, as an American taxpayer over here, and as I'm this generation, remember, that was my daddy, in my granddaddy's generation, you know, and maybe my great-granddaddy's generation going back to 1898. So from my great-granddaddy to my granddaddy to my daddy, that was their thing. Now, I got to pay the bill for all of this. I'm George Gordon, and I'm paying the bills for all of this. One day I woke up, I read this book by Butler. He says, war is a racket. And I said, yeah, you know, and we're paying for this. We never made a dime off of it. All we did in the entire experience from 1898 to 2006 is lose money on the Philippines project. So why do we want to get involved in the Iraqi project or the Iranian project or the North Korea project? Or, as Butler points out a little later in the book, he says, you know, if you look at it from just an economics point of view, why do we want to get involved in all of these losers around the world? They don't make a dime. They cost us a lot of money, take a lot of time, effort, and energy, and kills a lot of people in the process. Are you really sure you want to do that? Now, there is little doubt but what we Americans want to do that. At least we wanted to do it in 2003. We wanted to go over there and kick ass over in Iraq. So we went over there and we spent I think we're on our fourth $100 billion in the process. And now the last election here, just a few days ago, I guess we all took a look at that and said, no, I don't think it was worth it. Well, if it isn't worth it in 2006, why was it worth it in 2003? Was there anybody that honest to God believed that they were going to make money on this transaction? Hang on. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. Seven days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Please be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this network, or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. We're reviewing a book by 3-star Marine General Smedley Butler called War is a Racket. If you'd like to get a copy, I just bought this the other day from Barnes & Noble. War is a Racket. See if I've got any more information in here. Smedley, S-M-E-D-L-E-Y, Smedley Butler. Who writes this book? Farrell House, F-E-R-A-L House, P.O. Box 39910, that's 39910, Los Angeles, California, 90039. They've also got a webpage. It's www.farrellhouse.com. Or you can go info@farrellhouse.com. They've got an email there. And I don't remember what the price was, probably $5 or $10, something like that, at Barnes & Noble. Smedley Butler got out of the military about 1932, I believe, or 34. By 1935, he had a few reflections, and so he jotted it down on pen and paper, and that's what we're reviewing today. He goes on to say, then to save that China trade of about $90 million, or to protect those private investments of less than $200 million in the Philippines, we would be all stirred up to hate Japan and go to war, a war that might well cost us tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of lives of Americans, and many more hundreds of thousands of physically maimed and mentally unbalanced men. Now, that's precisely, remember, this is 1935 when he's writing these words, and that's precisely what we did. We went to war against Japan. There was $90 million worth of trade with China and about $200 million worth of investments in the Philippines, and the Japanese came over there and took that away from us. So we went out there and we spent billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of lives to get it all back so that we could turn around 1 year later and give it to the Filipinos. You know, it would seem like to me that we could have butted out of the whole thing, saved billions of dollars in the process. I mean, it's not for me to second guess decisions that were made 50 or 75 years ago, but my God, I'm still paying those bills today. And so are you and everybody else. And so now, while the president is talking about this Iranian problem and the North Korea problem, has it ever occurred to any of us that that's really not our bitch? That we really don't have a problem with North Korea? You ever stop and think about that? When was the last time the North Koreans attacked, say, Los Angeles or Seattle? When was the last time that the Iranians attacked New York or Houston? You know, to the best of my knowledge. You know, and I'm just Joe Sixpack over here, you know, reading the papers like Will Rogers, but the last time I looked up, they hadn't caused us any problem. Now, I remember the North Koreans attacked the South Koreans, and President Truman said, well, that can't go on like that, so we got to go over there and get involved in the Korean War. And I've got to ask the question now today in 2006, well, what was that all about? I mean, if you think about it, over in Sudan today, you've got these Arabs in Sudan who are fighting with the blacks in Sudan, and there's a bunch of people over there. It's a place called Darfur, and I think there's a million at last count, or maybe 2 million refugees over there that are being murdered, and they're just being raped, robbed, and pillaged, and there's just this terrible killing going on. And I'm sitting over here in the United States saying, well, what's that to us? What's our problem? And then there's all these do-gooders out here. They're running around saying, oh, my God, we got to do something about that. And I'm asking the question, why? And so is Smedley Butler. He was asking this 1935. He's sitting there saying, why do we want to get involved in somebody else's bitch? I mean, there's just no end of strife and trouble in the world. I guess if you want to be a world-ruling empire and you want to go out here and be the world's policeman and you just can't contain yourself anymore and you just got to go over here and make peace, why don't we go down to Cuba and have a regime change down there and save them Cubans from themselves? Or maybe we could go over to Sudan and save those people in Darfur, you know. Maybe we could go down to Africa and butt into somebody else's bitch down there. But I'm just asking the question. And obviously, we Americans want to do all those things because that's what we are doing. That's what we have been doing. And as far as I can tell, we will continue to keep on doing. I'm just throwing out the question, why? What's in it for you? How much money are you going to make on the project? And some guy's going to write me a letter and say, well, you know, saving human lives is not something that you put a dollar of value on. Well, excuse me. We put a dollar of value on people's lives when they get killed in a car wreck. And boys and girls, whether you like it or not, every one of those soldiers that comes back from Iraq after he's been through an explosion and his legs are blown off, there is a cost of about $3 million per soldier to rehabilitate him and to put him back into the civilian economy. Now, you've killed about 3,000 over there so far. See, that's the cheapest thing you can do is kill them. Then you bring them back, dig a hole in the ground, bury the body. That's you know, fairly inexpensive. He's got an insurance program. I don't know what they're paying now. In World War II, it was $10,000. But I mean, suppose it's $100,000. You pay the family $100,000. You bury the body. It's all over. When this guy comes back and he's beaten up, and there's I forgot how many around. It's in the thousands. It's 8, 10, 15 thousand. I've seen some numbers here, and I can't recollect it right now. But you know, let's just say there's 10,000 injured soldiers. We'll take 10,000 times 3 million. Here's 10 times 3. That's 30. Let's see if I can use my sharp EL1197G3 here. 10. Let's keep going here. One more. That's a million times. No, I got to have 3 million. 3 million. And let's just take times 10,000. How many have we got here? See, it goes into this E mode. There's not enough spaces on here. My machine doesn't go into the billions and billions of dollars. So I guess we got to do it this way. We got to take 30. No, let's just take $3 million. Let's see if I can do this. $3 million per person. Now we got 10,000. So we'll just take that times 10. And that gives us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 30 million. That's $30 billion, kids. $30 billion. So there's a dollar value on every wounded soldier that comes back from Iraq. Now, what are we getting out of this? I mean, we went over there and we butted in. Somebody said, oh, well, they attacked the trade centers. Didn't we establish that Saddam Hussein and the Iraqis had nothing to do with the terrorist attack on 9/11? I thought that was pretty well established by all of the government. I mean, if there was ever a story that President Bush would like to promulgate, it's that Saddam Hussein orchestrated the attack. But he's had to come back and admit that, no, it wasn't Saddam Hussein that did that. I mean, this is a strange phenomenon that you get attacked by Japan. Let's just picture this. Japan attacks Pearl Harbor in 1941, and so we declare war on Brazil because we need regime change in Brazil, and we fight a war with Brazil. Excuse me. Wouldn't it make more sense to go to war against Japan because they attacked Pearl Harbor? Well, back in the 1940s, I guess we had more common sense than we have today, because when the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor, then we went to war against Japan, not Brazil. Today, Al-Qaeda, operating from Afghanistan, the last I understood was that they attacked us and they were the guys responsible for 9/11. So we went to war against Afghanistan, and that made all the sense in the world. But now where is the sense for going to war against Iraq? See where we're going here, kids? Let's try another one. The president keeps telling us over here that we got to go to war against the Iranians because they're developing nuclear weapons. Well, the last time I counted, I think there's 9 other countries in the world that have nuclear weapons, including a couple of real loose cannons on the deck. India and Pakistan both have nukes. And I understand that there's a couple, 3 countries in the world that have nukes that ain't talking about them. Saudi Arabia is one, and Israel is another. Now, if Pakistan and India are a couple of loose cannons on the deck, don't you think that Saudi Arabia and Israel are a couple of more loose cannons? Are we going to war against Pakistan and India because they have nuclear weapons? Then I don't think it's a good idea to have nukes. I don't want you to get me wrong here. I'm not in favor of North Korea having nukes. Hell, I'm not in favor of Grenada, Guatemala, or Panama having nuclear weapons, if you know you get right down on the bottom line. But by the same token, are you really sure that we want to go to war to prevent the Iranians from developing nuclear weapons? I mean, we didn't go to war against Pakistan when they developed nuclear weapons. We didn't go to war with India when they developed nuclear weapons. We didn't go to war with Russia or China when they developed nuclear weapons. And I'm sure that we're all in agreement here that all these nukes running around the world aren't a very good idea. We've been arguing and passing resolutions and entering SALT treaties and all kinds of treaties and negotiations trying to limit this genie that's now out of the jar. And I laud that, and I'm not opposed to that, and I think that's a good idea. The genie's out of the jar, though, and so that's where we're at. The president, though, is telling us that we're not going to let those Iranians develop nukes. I'm sitting here saying, why not? On the South Africans, you know, one of these days with the Japanese, I think because of the nukes that are in North Korea, the Japanese, you know, one of these days may wake up and say, you know, we may need that. I don't know that, you know, but the Indonesians might come to that conclusion one of these days. What are we going to do? Go to war with everybody in the world to prevent them from getting nukes? Now, this guy Butler over here, he's got a couple of wild ideas. He says, you know, why don't we butt out of everybody else's business? I mean, for America, this is a wild new concept.
That's why I'm reporting on this book, because this guy Butler, a three-star Marine general, says, why don't we just butt out of everybody else's bitchin' life? Mind our own business, which is a wild challenge for Americans. Mind your own business. And leave the Iranians alone. You know, we could have done it this way. If we hadn't gone to war against the Iraqis, we wouldn't be over there spending $100 billion a year on that Iraq war, would we? But then again, Halliburton wouldn't be making billions of dollars on no-bid contracts. Now, do you suppose that maybe Halliburton and the fact that Vice President Cheney is an official from the Halliburton company that we elected as vice president, remember? And that the oil companies, you know, Exxon and Mobil and Standard Oil and Chevron and all these oil companies over here, maybe they've got something to do with this war in Iraq because they have 25% of the world's reserves, and maybe we wanted to go over there and secure those reserves for America. And as Butler points out, you know, let's just take this pragmatically. They got 25% of the world's reserves, and there's about a trillion barrels. So, I mean, they must have about 250 billion barrels. Okay. Let's take 250 and multiply that times $60 a barrel, and that's 15,000. Let's just keep on going over here. If you got 250 billion barrels at $60 a barrel, I'm going to make my number here, 250. You got to be patient with me here. I'm just a plumber, and we're getting into big numbers over here, boys and girls, and we're talking about billions and billions, as old Carl Sagan used to say, billions and billions. You got 250 billion barrels of oil. I'm going to write this out here and put all these zeros on here, 3, 6. I've got to have another 3 zeros here. That's how much we got. Now, we're going to multiply that times 60. So it looks like we just put down one more zero. That's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3. That's $2,500,000,000, near as I can figure this. $2,500,000,000. All right. Now, the American economy, boys and girls, is about $11 trillion a year, last time I heard. Now, it is true that $2,500,000,000 is a lot of money. But do you remember when I started tonight's program, I said, have you heard some of the costs that we Americans have now racked up concerning this Iraqi oil? All right. The Iraqi war and the Iraqi oil, they kind of go together. Let me tell you what that is once more. It's estimated that the total cost of the Iraq war so far, if we stopped fighting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock and brought everybody home, we're in this deal already $1 to $2 trillion, and we're not quite sure how those numbers are going to come out. Typically, they come out on the high side. An example of that, when they were talking about going to war in Iraq, they said it would be about $50 billion. And this is George Bush selling this to Congress now. $50 billion. And we would get the $50 billion out of the oil revenues from Iraq. And we're going to take it out in oil. We're going to make the Iraqis pay for this. So far, we've spent $400 billion, and we're going to be there, far as I could tell, for another year or two. And if George Bush has his way, it'll be two. And if the Democrats, who are run by the same elitists, you know, the Committee of 300, as is the Republicans, then it will be there for another couple of years in this phased withdrawal, in this process. And now that's going to run us about $1 trillion. And when we leave there, we're not taking any oil with us. And that's the tragic part. I mean, if we could go over there and steal the $2.5 trillion worth of oil and leave there, and it cost us $1 trillion, then we profited by $1.5 trillion. That makes sense. I can see doing that. If we could go over there and it cost us $2 trillion and we took $2.5 trillion worth of oil, I could see doing that because we'd make a half a trillion dollars. But from where I'm sitting here today in 2006, it appears to me that when we leave Iraq, we're going to leave net losers $2 trillion and we're not taking a barrel of oil out of there, which means we're going to have to pay whatever the market price is to buy the oil anyway. Well, hell, couldn't we have already done that before without going to war and without spending any money? Couldn't we have just paid the market price anyway, like we were doing before we went to war over there? Again, you know, the rational basis for just butt out and mind your own business actually makes a lot more money in the final analysis. Because the way I see it, we're not going to get the $2.5 trillion worth of oil, and we're going to have to spend $2 trillion trying to get it, and then we failed, and so we're going to have to spend $2.5. Now, let's see if I got this correct. The Iraqis, when we started in 2003, had $2.5 trillion worth of oil that we Americans are going to end up spending $4.5 trillion for after we've killed 3,000 soldiers and we've injured a bunch more on top of it. Hey, kids, I think old Butler over here and his philosophy of butt out, it's cheaper, probably has a lot more merit than we've given it credit for in the past. Now, I don't expect any great changes in American foreign policy. And I don't expect any great changes in the Iraq policy. But I just thought I would share this with you because from my perspective in life, I took a look at this some years ago and I said, you know, I think I'll opt out of this. And I wanted to point out that in the Bible, I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, but in the Bible, God says, if you're going to go to war, you got to have my permission first. Got to have my permission. And we didn't get God's permission in this war, and it isn't turning out very well, and we didn't get God's permission in the Vietnam War, and that one didn't turn out very well for us either. And somebody's going to say, well, we didn't get permission in World War One or World War Two either, but we had some provocations there, and that's called self-defense. Now, there's a self-defense principle. If somebody attacks you, you can go defend yourself. But I don't remember that the North Koreans attacked us. Now this Afghani war has been working out pretty well. You know, they attacked us and we're self-defense mode over there. But this Iraq thing over here, they didn't attack us. The North Koreans didn't attack us and the Vietnamese didn't attack us. And those three wars have not worked out well for us. I just thought I'd share that with you. That you need to at least get attacked. You should at least wait until, and if nothing else, you should bribe the other side, or you should do something to evoke in the other side some hatred or some contempt for which you can bait them into attacking you, and then at least you've got the self-defense mode. But I don't think we've got self-defense here. I think it's just plain greed. And I just thought I'd point out to you, as Mr. Butler is doing here, that this war thing is a racket that makes a lot of money for some people, but it costs the rest of us a whole lot. And it really isn't economical. So, thought I'd share that with you, that the war is not very economical. All right, we're about running out of time here, so I've got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.